Dylan from Santa Cruz. Let's see, that was Santa Cruz, one of the concerts in the year 2001. You know, we're live here in the studio, and we're lucky enough to have one of the EPA biologists. Last night during the show, I mentioned that there's been a huge article. It covered the front page of the Sunday Contra Costa Times. Environmental sirens in the Delta are screaming, and it goes into some detail about the extreme decline of certain species. Essentially, it would appear that the food sources of many of the smaller fish, well, many of the fish are, the food sources are declining so rapidly that there's massive starvation or something else is happening in the bay. And they mentioned a census of fish that there were some smelts, there were bass, and the extreme decline, in one case there were 62,000 and now it's down to 109. On the line with us is Bruce Herbold. He's one of the EPA biologists here in Bruce, you cover western states, or do you just cover the bay?
I just cover the estuary, the bay and estuary, pretty much from Sacramento and Stockton down to here, San Francisco.
All right.
Been working on this stuff since the mid-80s.
Yeah, you're prominently mentioned in this article. Apparently the author, Mike Tiger,
Tauger. How he pronounces that.
Yeah, he mentions you prominently as one of the experts referred to. What can you tell about this extreme die-off?
Well, what's happened is Fish and Game, for a long time, for about 35 years, goes out every fall, every September, October, November, and samples for small fish to see how many fish we got out of various kinds in the preceding year. And they go out at about 112 stations, and, as I say, sample each station in each month, and then they put those numbers together. And that allows you to say, you know, what was a good year, what was a bad year. It doesn't really tell you total population of fish or anything, but it says, you know, if you sum them up and it comes up to a big number, then, you know, there's a lot of fish out there. And they've been doing this since 1967, and these are the numbers that are used to assess things like endangered species of Delta smelt. And this last fall, it was the lowest number on record of Delta smelt. At the same time, it was the lowest number on record of striped bass young of year. Other fish, which we thought we had a pretty good handle on, there's another smelt called longfin smelt. And pretty clearly, when it rains in the spring, you get a bunch of longfin smelt in the fall. And it didn't rain so much, and we got many fewer than we expected. It was one of the few fish where we really have a solid expectation of how many we should see, and we got many fewer than that. And then threadfin shad, which is just a bait fish that was introduced into the Delta back in the 50s and has taken off. It's always been the most abundant fish in the Delta. It's just, you look at the numbers on it, and come 2002, 2003, 2004, they're suddenly about a 20th or less of what they had been in the preceding few years. So it made us think something's gone wrong out there. Something has really shifted. And whether it's just a tipping point that we've overbalanced it and there's so many stresses on it that we just put a straw in the camel's back and it broke, or whether something has really changed out there, that's the first question we want to answer. And so we're doing a lot of new studies this coming summer to get at that.
All right. Well, that said, is there, In reading this article, and I very much recommend people go online and take, if you can't find a copy of the Contra Costa Sunday Times, you can see this article online. It was kind of difficult to find. When I went to Contra Costa Times, I think I had to enter in smelt as a search, and then I was able to get the headline, Environmental Sirens in Delta Are Screaming. And in it, it gives these astounding numbers to go from hundreds of thousands, tens of thousands of fish down to 50 or 100. Now, is first of all, when we're looking at these numbers, is this per hectare or some sort of acre foot of water?
These are indices. They're just, as I say, the Fish and Game goes out at these stations and hauls nets, and then they say, okay, well, we got, you know, six smelt here, and we think that the area that this represents is some volume, and they multiply that. And then they do it the next month, and they end up adding all those together. So it's not really fish per acre foot or anything like that, but it is a reliable index of this year was more than that year, and how much more. That's pretty good. But going out and saying exactly how many fish are out there takes work that they don't do. They rely on these kind of indices to guide this fish is doing well or this fish is not doing well. And in this case, we have a bunch of fish all simultaneously not doing well.
Right, and it mentions that the, my eyes, it's very bad light in here. Copods? Copods are the...
little invertebrates that are everybody's favorite fish food.
Right, and it sounds like they're massive. They're sort of like the house fly for birds. They're every kind of fish loves to eat copods, and essentially there's a massive die-off of them.
Yeah, the exact species has changed through time, but they've always been what the fish eat, and all the ones that used to be really good fish food are also some of the species that are in decline. So it's tempting to think that something killed off the copepods and that starved the fish to death. That might be the case. There's other conditions out there that are also likely factors, or we may need to track down what killed off the copepods. And there's a number of likely culprits for that. But right now it's at the stage of making a list of what could be wrong out there, what has changed in the last few years out there, and figuring out what can we look at to see whether this is likely to need more research or not. But, yeah, when the food all goes away and the fish all go away, it is tempting to think that there's a connection.
Well, right, and so this gets into two angles. First of all, I guess MTBE. Is MTBE thought to be a culprit?
No, because that's been a problem out there for a long time. And that's more of a human health, the drinking water issue. Not an impact on fish per se. It can make drinking water taste bad, but not much. That's not one of the things we have on the list. One of the things we have on the list is a new category of pesticides. They moved away from marketing organophosphate pesticides because they were very toxic to humans and other mammals, and they moved towards using these compounds called pyrethroids, which are much less toxic to humans. And that's a good thing, but they're much more toxic to fish and aquatic animals. And so if you look at the numbers for some of those pyrethroids, the last couple of years, they increased the use of those from, say, 5,000 pounds in a lot of years and during the 90s to 20,000 pounds in 2003. So you go, maybe... The efforts to reduce toxic impacts on humans and mammals is having a side effect now on poisoning either fish food or fish. And that's one of the things we want to get out there and look at.
Right. And this massive die-off, you know, we can look at it in terms of a research project, but if there is a massive lack of food for the remaining fish out there, is there something that can be done that would replace the copods? in a quick way.
More a question of can we get it so that copepods aren't killed off, and whether they're being killed off because of contaminants, or they're being killed off because of changes in how water projects are operated, other likely mechanisms out there. If we can attack that, then maybe we can get the system back on track. I don't think we want to start growing copepod farms or anything, but if we can figure out why they went away, then maybe we can fix it.
Well, right, but it makes it very plain in this article that the massive die-out, this is what, in some cases, this is a 95% die-off of, you know, from the last survey. So something has to be done with a certain amount of urgency to replace or to reinvigorate the remaining ones. Otherwise, as you probably remember with the disappearance of robins, with the frogs and other, the other amphibians in the last few years, there was a 90% die-off in 1 year, and then the succeeding year was another die-off of another 90%. So, with that in mind, you know, you've got a remaining of 1%. You know, that is such a profound loss that it may take decades to revitalize. And with the bad economy, there's always the excuse
that
you have to pollute more in order to revitalize the economy. And so there's never a time when the economy is healthy enough to allow for nature to get back to some balance. So, you know, I'm asking from the viewpoint of what is it going to take without money to revitalize the bay? What can we do now to revitalize the bay, notwithstanding moronic budget patterns?
Yeah. Well, one thing the people that I talk with generally feel is the stressors that we're putting on the bay, we need to at least not make them worse until we figure out what's going on out there. And that's a hard enough fight, let alone reverse some of them. But we certainly can't start fixing the problem until we figure out exactly where the problem's coming from. But part of the reason this is attracting so much attention is the water projects in the Delta are looking at ways that they can change their operations and increase reliability of water supplies out of the Delta. And this is coming just at the time when the talks about how to do that are happening. And most of the biologists I talk with don't think that we should be trying to increase that stress on the fish until we figure out whether that's what's killing them off or whether there's something else that we can fix. So kind of stopping the bleeding is the first step. And that's not going to go just right there. That's not going to make some people very happy.
Well, you know, there are so many different ways of looking at economics. You know, Charles Hurwitz, with his savings and loans scandals, helped decimate the freshwater system of Northern California by the cutting down of the redwoods. The spawning grounds of many of these fish are decimated up and down the coast. And if there had been a measure of justice in the savings and loans industry, then he would not have had the excuse to cut down the redwoods in the last 10 years. So it's, you know, if there was economic justice to begin with, then you would have much more, you know, a healthier economy, and then we would have the ability to take more measured stances with, you know, water and the other natural resources that we've got. But let's look at a particular aspect of this. So off the air, just as we were setting up the interview, I had asked you about the extent of these losses. So is this specifically tied to the immediate bay, or is it, what are the other tributaries that are really in danger here? And can we kind of focus where this damage is and then take it to some aspects of potential remediation?
Yeah. Well, we're trying to take there's two answers to that. One, we're focusing on those fish that this fall midwater trawl samples, because that is the best sampling out there. and that covers most of the estuary. So that's a big enough bite to try to fix. But at the same time, the herring fishery seems to be really in bad shape. Dan, we just had a miserable last year for the herring fishery down off Tiburon in San Francisco. And at the same, and that happens in December and January. And at the same time, the last couple of years, we have had abysmal salmon smolt survival. The young salmon trying to swim through the South Delta and out to the bay. Fish and Wildlife Service measures that. In the last 2 years, that has been awful. And that's in April and May. And the fish that we're concerned about, we think most of the factors that might be responsible are probably operating in the summertime. So, you know, you look at it, you go, geez, there's major problems upstream and downstream later in the year and earlier in the year. We're trying to keep a handle with people working on those things, but we're trying to figure out in the middle what's going on. And maybe that has, you know, if it's contaminants coming in from agricultural waters or something, well then, yeah, it'll extend on upstream and it'll extend on downstream. If it's growth of toxic algae in the delta, well then maybe that's the answer for some of our fish, but that won't apply to herring or salmon. So we're trying to get a handle on what's going on here, and with an eye to the bigger world, but we're not trying to look at that whole big world at once.
Well, it's certainly difficult to look at the great ecosystem as a single puzzle piece, that's for sure. And so we're in a profoundly difficult spot, sort of an all the king's horses and all the king's men. But as you started in that last bit, you mentioned, so this is the results of it was autumn and midwinter surveys?
These surveys are done to look at, most of these fish spawn in the spring, and then this survey surveys the fish after they've been spawned. So it's the production of young fish in each year. So they get produced in the spring, and they grow through the summer, and then this survey goes out and samples to get an estimate of how well did they do that year in September, October, November, and December.
Yeah, so we're essentially looking at the numbers from October to December, or September to December.
And we're looking at things that might have affected them after they spawned while they were trying to grow, to feed into that September, October, November period.
Okay. Now, I guess a number of different things come into this. Is there currently a budget cut of the – you're with the state EPA or the U.S. EPA?
Federal
EPA. Well, everybody knows there's constant budget cuts to the federal EPA. So in the particular departments revolving around this, is there any budget, or what is there an ability to facilitate an emergency appropriations into your department to make sure that this is looked at, or is this going to be a quiet a die-off because the state is, or the federal government is not going to pay for an examination of the problem?
What's happening? And the state of California is responding, I think, very well to this problem. Federal EPA is, I am involved in this very on the side because I'm not out sampling the fish myself. It's really State Fish and Game, State Department of Water Resources that have the real lead on this, because they're the ones out there getting wet and dirty. And at the same time, they're being very good. The upper management in those agencies is telling their staff to figure out what they need to do to start getting some answers about this. And they are speaking as if they think they can get the money to do this, to do extra work. And the flip side of that is we're right in the middle of the state fiscal year. I mean, the money's already been allocated to do everything. So this is a right in the middle of the year course change, very difficult for governmental agencies to do. But they're responding, and what we've come up with is a work plan where on the backs of the monitoring that we normally do, we're going to be going out and doing other monitoring and coordinating studies in particular places where we think this might answer a question or not, tell us whether this is important or not. For instance, there's this toxic green algae that's suddenly become abundant out there in the summertime. But all we have are people's observations that, yeah, the water's full of these green cornflakes the last few years. What we're going to do is go out and actually sample how much of this green cornflakes there are and compare that with, okay, did we see higher or lower abundance of fish at that place? It's real simple to do, to pull a net through the water and count the green goop. But we haven't been doing that. It's that kind of quantitative, go out and compare this with this, and start saying, no, we had lots of green goop and we still had lots of fish food. Or, yeah, where we found green goop, we didn't find any fish food and we didn't find any fish that had any food in their bellies. You know, those are the kinds of questions we're looking at. So it's on the back of, it's not a whole new effort. It's adding stuff onto what's all going on there. So it's looking to be cheap. And I'm also hearing good things that they're going to try to get money to have it happen. I don't know where that money's going to come from. But if we can make this cheap enough to do good work, but get enough money so that we can do good work, then I will be very happy.
Oh, yeah. Well, now, there are a number of different things. In this article, it makes it plain that the copepods, which are the food of plenty generally for all of these different types of fish, have disappeared very quickly. And the remaining ones are in a danger because there is so much, apparently, if the copepods don't have enough to eat, then they will go toward shore to look for food. As they go toward shore, they become more attractive for shorebirds, and the fish won't be able to eat the copepods. The birds will eat them instead. So I'm wondering, obviously here in California,
that's not quite the story.
Correct me. Go ahead.
One of the theories here is that if the copepods, the fish food, are not abundant, then the fish that are trying to eat them will move into the edges. And these are fish that live mostly out in the channel. So the edges in the delta have gotten filled up with aquatic vegetation, and that aquatic vegetation is home to a lot of predatory fish. And so it may be that if the fish can't feed where they normally feed, where they're kind of safe out in the middle, then maybe they're being eaten up by a lot of predators that are along the edge. That leads into some of the neat stuff here. Because the Department of Boating Waterways for the state of California has been going out and trying to spray herbicides on these aquatic vegetation beds where the predatory fish live. Well, that might be a good thing because it'll reduce the habitat for the predatory fish, but it may also be the source for a toxic that's having an impact. Or it may be shifting us to have plants like this toxic algae that's out there. So those are the kind of it could go this way or it could go that way, kind of issues that we're at. But the one thing I'm pretty sure of is that there's more than one thing at work out there.
Oh, yeah. It sounds like it's very clear that what I was going to lead up to was the West Nile. We're getting into both the homeland security demands on counties. It's my understanding that West Nile has actually facilitated an aspect of the homeland security budget toward spraying in every community in America. It's almost like a welfare program for the pesticides industry, insecticide industry, to kill mosquitoes as part of the homeland security budget. So many of the counties who are cash strapped are jumping on this money in order to get any sort of a revenue stream, and so there's much more spraying, which may be a problem. I had heard that dragonflies, for example, are a much better way to control West Nile or mosquitoes. So I'm wondering, as you mentioned in the the efforts to cut down the weeds along the shore, they're dumping herbicides into the bay, which may be, facilitating this problem. What sort of contraindications of the use of various types of pesticides and herbicides are going on out there?
Well, we haven't done a lot of surveys. There's a kind of test called a bioassay, where you take a water sample and you put organisms that you understand their physiology and see if they die in the water or not. And that's a very simple test, and it's done a lot as a first cut as to whether there's a problem or not. But we haven't been doing that in the Delta. It's been very few bioassays have ever been performed in the Delta. And so that's one of the things we're adding on to this study this year. Along with sampling the fish and the fish food, we're going to be collecting at some scattered sites water samples and taking them back to the lab and doing some fairly detailed bioassays to see, is the water immediately toxic to fish food? Is it immediately toxic to fish? Is it long-term? It's a chronic problem where it decreases growth, puts a stress on the fish or on their fish food. With 800 miles of agricultural fields dumping their water into the waterways, and with major cities at each end of the Delta, it's not unreasonable to think that we should be doing bioassays, but we haven't been. So this is prompting us to do that more kind of comprehensive look at the problems, and I'm eager to find out some results.
Well, aren't we all? I had come to California so that I could play in the bay, and the first thing I learned was don't stick your foot in there. The mercury and dioxin from petroleum
all kinds of good stuff.
I mean, we've created
the gold rush, which is where all that mercury came from.
Right. We've essentially been poisoning our bay with abandon for a century and a half, and now when you say there's really no bioassay, has there ever been one?
They do some bioassays down in the bay itself, but that's not my bailiwick. Where I'm talking is up in the Delta, where it's freshwater, and that's where these fish are. And there we really just haven't been doing them.
So that doesn't seem like simply a lack of oversight. It seems almost like mismanagement. When you imagine that this is something that should have been done, as with any study, you can always have the endless arguing about the results of the study because there aren't enough numbers to justify it. So if we were to start a study now, we would essentially be starting at year one as opposed to any kind of a control number. So
it's nice with bioassays because if the water's toxic, then you don't really need to compare it to something else. You can be fairly confident that if it's killing the fish in the lab sample, you've got a problem there.
Well, I understand, but it's, in other words, the Rush Limbaughs of the world can always poo-poo the results of it by saying, well, maybe it's always been this way, So we've essentially got to get budgets going for ongoing and constant studies of the upper Delta, and is there any ability for old county numbers? Do county extension agents have the ability to gather numbers?
There's three things that we're proposing to do this summer to check this. One of these is new studies like bioassays. Another one is increased monitoring, as I described. And the third one is going out and finding out what else people know out there, what's called data mining. Go out and find what data we haven't looked at or didn't look at from this perspective before and see if we can find something out. So that's very much the sort of thing that we're going to try to have some people digging through and see what we can find out. I just got a call this morning from a guy talking about one irrigation district that has been using a lot of copper sulfate to clean the algae out of its water before it delivers it. And copper is really toxic to some fish eggs. So let's find out is that water district discharging water with copper in it at a time when striped bass would be spawning nearby? If so, maybe we've got a problem to chase down. That's that kind of lots of phone calls and lots of reading is the third prong on this attack we're trying to mount.
Yeah, that's my God, there are so many different angles that we can go with this, because I would expect that with a certain amount of the dredging, we've heard for years that .com, the creation of all of these computers, have really created a massive new series of problems of toxics, a lot more lead and cadmium and other heavy metals. And I'm wondering if, as you mentioned, the copper, what sorts of hazardous waste sites or just normal landfills with potential of leaching into the bay. We've had an inordinate number of rainy years in the last, couple of El Niños, and this year alone is proving to be a fairly wet winter, which would obviously flush a lot more toxics, which are land-based, into the bay or into the delta. So is there a way of determining some aspects of this? The other is the thinning of the ozone layer. Is this a potential harm to the copepods and the other emerging fish, their eggs?
We're seeing some things that worry us about climate change. California is just one of the cleanest cases of long-term climate change, because we've gone... If you were to look at a graph of percent snow versus percent rain, we've really gone way into the much more rain and much less snow. And that what that means is we get a lot of floods, and then we don't have all that snow to provide water, in later in the year. And it looks like we're going to have more and more of that. That's certainly, going to have an impact on the ecosystem, on the transport of contaminants. How much gets washed out in the floods in the springtime and how much of it stays around in the summertime. Those kind of impacts are more likely, I think, than the ozone, because we're seeing some of those impacts already.
All right. Now, that said, are there, in various parts of the country that don't necessarily have the dry spells that California does, the monsoon season and then the long dry spells, are there plants that are suitable in California to, if we laid in a lot of crops of something that would have good strong roots that would absorb much of the rain as soon as it fell, and then
there's some efforts to reverse some of the impacts of logging upstream, but that's really getting out of my bailiwick.
Yeah, unfortunately, and this goes into the old Charles Hurwitz business, he not only would clear cut whole sections, but then he would spray diesel plus various herbicides on the land so that it could be used for a monocrop later. And the idea that you mentioned, that the snow is not going to be there to stay in storage for a certain amount of years, or a certain amount of the year, but then would essentially instantly melt and then create runoff and no trees to soak it up and,
yeah,
you know, make an 800 foot, or not 800, a couple of hundred foot amount of water stuck up in the air. You know, we've got to do some sort of not just reforestation, but plantings so that water does not rush swiftly into the estuaries.
And California relies so much on that snowpack to get us through the years. I mean, the concrete reservoirs are just nothing compared to the usual reservoirs like right now that we have up in the Sierras. This is just a perfect year. We need more years like this. But the general trend is away from these nice snowy years and into the rainy ones, and that just it starves us of water at the late year, and it floods us out in the first part of the year.
So that said, I mean, obviously we want to pray for snow, but is there anything that you would recommend the general public to do? A second would be, are there abilities for the population to volunteer in some of these surveys, in some of the efforts to it seems really preposterous to me to hear that the mention in this article was that the and I do stand corrected. I so it wasn't the copepods that were dying off at the shore. It was the young fish that were coming toward the shore to eat, and they were then being snapped up by the birds. But what can be normally? I would have thought that the shore grasses and shore vegetation would have been a good place for small fish to hide out in and to thrive. But you're saying then that the channel is just so vapid of
for these fish, they really, for most of their lives, they're open water fish.
Okay.
So they don't have to worry about so much about you know, the great blue heron standing on the shoreline, because they're out in deeper water. So that allows you to separate out some of what might be killing them off. But it's easy also to miss the boat with that, because this sample, this survey that we're focusing on samples just fish out in the midwater. And if the water is toxic, it should be toxic to fish on the bottom and on the edges. But we don't sample those fish as well. So one of the other things we're doing is going in and trying to dig out numbers for those other fish, and if it's direct toxicity, then they should be getting knocked down too, but we don't have the numbers to really look at that. If it's toxicity on fish food, then other fish that eat copepods that aren't out in the open water should decline, whereas others that are, you know, eating something else might be doing okay. That's the kind of studies we're trying to mount these in the next few months to get some quick answers.
Okay, so these studies need to be done. If there is no specific federal grant for that, perhaps ABAG, Association of Bay Area Governments, could help fund it. The state, it sounds like we really need to lean on Arnold and the state legislature to get some funding for this. But in addition, it sounds like with such a massive die-off, we've got to do something to provide food for the remaining few. Is there something that can be, you know, I don't want to say we should be scattering breadcrumbs in the estuary, but yeah. Is there something that can be done to revitalize the few that remain?
Well, you were asking what, you know, what the normal person can do, and some of those things would be, as you say, putting some pressure to find the money to do work and insist that it be good science, that it be good, that you, with credible results, so that we can legitimately say, yes, this is a problem we need to pursue further, and this is not. The other thing is, a lot of where the contaminants come from is by the people who live all around this bay. Both agriculture and private use don't get a lot of regulation over how much people waste and how much of it gets into the bay and estuary. So, you know, taking responsibility, if you're out, you know, spraying the lawn, don't spray it so that it goes off into the gutter and down into the bay. That sort of just personal responsibility would help a lot, especially if it's spread out to the ag and everybody else that relies on this bay.
Right. As you mentioned that, by the way, I've always had a particular disdain for the pesticide, or excuse me, the herbicide Roundup. I used to manage an orchard back in Colorado, and you had to be licensed to handle Roundup. And nowadays, Roundup is advertised in the open market, and it apparently has not changed its formula, and they show these people
a lot.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, you walk into a Home Depot and just look at the mountain of chemicals that people take home and spread around, and it all goes down the drain.
Right, but Roundup is a particularly hazardous one, and this idea that it's been allowed into the open market with advertising campaigns. I saw one recently where two next-door neighbors are doing a contest, so to speak, you know, keeping up with the Joneses, who can kill weeds fastest.
How much can you use?
Right, and rather than
it's an interesting world we live in.
Right, in the usage that I was trained with it in, you would take something smaller than a Q-tip and just touch the plant with it. In this case, these guys are in the advertisement, they're spraying it, squirting it, and it's thousands of fold.
You know, there's the political thing people can do, and there's also the personal responsibility, and both those would be something I would urge everyone to grab hold of.
Right. Well, education and more of it. All right. Well, thank you, Bruce. Is there anything that we missed, anything that you would highlight in this article that we didn't discuss so far? I'd be glad to get you back in further interviews.
You have my phone number, so yeah, don't be shy. But no, I think we've covered most issues I'd want to raise.
All right. Is there any section of state, county, regional government that you think should be approached first in order to make sure that there is funding for these surveys and this the development of a solution for this?
I think I'm not the world's most politically astute person, but I think that if citizens of California think this is something that needs to be addressed, they should let Fish and Game know so that Fish and Game can use that support in their wrestling for budget dollars.
All right. And so Fish and Game on occasion has been corporate, and on occasion it's been good, honest people. So we need to constantly keep track of that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Hey, well, thank you, Bruce. I'll give you a holler in the next few days, and maybe we can do a follow-up interview.
Okay.
I'll see if I can. Is there any other department you think we should interview?
You might talk to some people with Department of Water Resources or Department of Fish and Game, and I can give you those contacts if you'd like.
Okay, great. I'll put you on hold, and then we'll go into a song, and I'll get you that off the air.
Okay, great.
Yeah, appreciate it. And you're listening to IndieBay.org here in San Francisco, and we'll move back into some music and then find some other solutions for this great world of ours. Thank you.